Some cases close with a confession, some close with a conviction, and some never really close at all. The Grimes Tapes is a detective fiction series following Detective Sarah Grimes as she works the cases that don't fit neatly into a file. Cases where power, politics, and human nature collide. And the truth is, the last thing anyone wants found. Season 1, Across the Aisle. A state senator is murdered at his own fundraiser. 200 guests in evening wear, a knife, and the faint trace of expensive cologne lingering in a dark alley. Detective Sarah Grimes and her partner Mike Callahan step into a world of donors, dynasties, and political alliances built on secrets. Everyone at the Grand Hotel that night had something to lose. And in the halls of power, everyone has a motive. The closer they get to the truth, the less they can trust. Across the Aisle, a novella. Prologue. The thump of bass from the hotel's grand ballroom faded as Jessica stumbled, giggling, her heels clicking on the polished floor of the service corridor. Mark's hand was warm in hers as he led her toward the promise of privacy. "Are you sure we should be back here?" Jessica whispered, the champagne buzz making her bold and giddy. Mark turned, his loosened tie a testament to the evening's festivities. "Relax, no one will notice we're gone. Besides," he added with a mischievous grin, "don't you want to see the stars?" Jessica's retort died on her lips as they pushed through a heavy door into the cool night air. The alley was narrow, hemmed in by the hotel's imposing walls on one side and a neighboring building on the other. Faint moonlight struggled to penetrate the urban canyon. "Oh," Jessica said, the champagne warmth evaporating in an instant. "It's darker than I thought." Mark chuckled, fumbling with his phone. "Hold on, I'll get us some light." The phone's flashlight pierced the gloom, casting long shadows. Jessica leaned against the cool brick, watching Mark's face as he stepped further into the alley. His expression shifted from playful to confused, then to horror in the span of a heartbeat. "Oh, God!" he choked out, stumbling backward. "Oh, God, no! Mark, what's wrong?" Jessica pushed off the wall, moving toward him. "Don't look!" Mark's voice was strangled, his free hand held out to stop her. But it was too late. The phone's light had found what Mark had seen. Crumpled against the wall, half hidden behind a dumpster, was a man. His crisp white shirt was stained dark, a pool of something Jessica's mind refused to identify spreading slowly across the pavement. Jessica's scream shattered the night, drowning out the distant sounds of the fundraiser still in full swing. As hotel security came running and sirens began to wail in the distance, neither Jessica nor Mark noticed the soft click of a service door at the far end of the alley. A shadow, indistinct in the dim light, slipped silently back into the building, leaving behind only the faintest whiff of expensive cologne mingling with the sharp scent of blood. Week 1. Detective Sarah Grimes ducked under the yellow crime scene tape, her eyes scanning the alley with the practiced efficiency of someone who had walked into too many scenes like this one. The flashing lights of police cruisers painted the brick walls in alternating red and blue. She pulled on a pair of latex gloves. "What have we got, Collins?" she asked the uniformed officer who approached her. Officer Collins flipped open his notepad. "Victim is male, mid-50s, well-dressed. Initial ID suggests he's State Senator James Thornton. Two civilians found the body about an hour ago. They're still with hotel security. Grimes stopped walking. A state senator. She let that settle before she spoke again. Who else knows? Brass is on the way. Media's already sniffing around the front entrance. Keep them out, every last one. She started toward the body again, already cataloging what she saw. The angle of the fall, the position of the hands, the dark stain spreading from the chest. Where's my junior? As if on cue, Junior Detective Mike Callahan appeared at the crime scene tape, slightly out of breath. He was 31, with the kind of boyish face that made witnesses trust him and suspects underestimate him. Grimes had been working with him for 8 months and was still making up her mind. Sorry, Detective. Traffic on the bridge. Get with hotel security. I want all camera footage. Lobby, elevators, corridors, service entrances, every angle, every exit. On it. He peeled off toward the hotel entrance without argument. Good. He was learning. The medical examiner, Dr. Lena Rodriguez, looked up as Grimes approached the body. Evening, Sarah. Wish it were under better circumstances. What can you tell me? Dr. Rodriguez gestured to the victim's chest. Single stab wound, likely severed the aorta. Death would have been quick. No defensive wounds that I can see. The knife is still in place. We'll bag it at the scene. Grimes crouched, studying the wound. The entry was clean, precise. No sawing, no hesitation marks. What's the weapon?
Kitchen knife. 8-inch blade, looks like professional-grade culinary equipment. Could have come right out of the hotel kitchen, honestly.
Grimes glanced toward the service door. A hotel kitchen knife. That opened up a whole category of suspects. Anyone with access to the kitchen, any staff member, any caterer working the fundraiser. Bag it carefully. I want prints, trace, manufacturer, everything.
Time of death?
Preliminary estimate. Between 9 and 10 p.m., I'll narrow it down. Grimes checked her watch. Just past midnight. The fundraiser was still technically ongoing, though the music had stopped and the remaining guests were being herded into a ballroom for questioning. Over 200 potential witnesses, or suspects. She stood, scanning the alley one more time. Two exits, the service door leading back into the hotel, and the mouth of the alley opening onto a side street. No cameras visible in the alley itself, though there might be something from the neighboring buildings. And that cologne, faint but unmistakable, men's cologne expensive. She filed it away. A commotion near the police line interrupted her thoughts. A young man in a rumpled suit was arguing with an officer.
I'm Senator Thornton's assistant. I need to know what's happening.
Grimes nodded to let him through. I'm Detective Grimes. And you are?
David Chen, Senator Thornton's personal assistant.
His face was the color of old paper. Is it true? Is he?
I'm afraid so, Mr. Chen. When was the last time you saw the senator?
Chen ran a shaky hand through his hair. Maybe around 9:15. He said he needed some air, seemed agitated after talking to someone. I offered to go with him, but he insisted on going alone.
Do you know who he was talking to?
I'm not sure, but I saw him with Mark Frost earlier. He's Governor Harrington's aide.
Chen paused. It was odd seeing him here. This was a Republican fundraiser. Grimes filed that away. A governor's aide at the opposing party's fundraiser. That was worth pulling on. Anyone else? Anyone the senator seemed uncomfortable around?
Chen hesitated. There was a woman. I didn't recognize her. She wasn't on the guest list, I don't think. She tried to approach the senator near the bar. He looked rattled. Security moved her along before I could get a closer look.
Can you describe her?
50s, maybe. Dark coat. She looked like she'd been crying.
Grimes made a note. An uninvited woman, emotional, trying to reach the senator. That needed following up.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. We'll need a full statement from you.
Callahan returned as Chen was led away by a uniform. Detective! Mrs. Thornton just arrived. She's demanding to see her husband.
I'll handle it. Grimes made her way to where Amelia Thornton stood near the police line. The woman's posture was impeccable, straight-backed, chin level, hands clasped in front of her. Her eyes were red-rimmed but dry.
Mrs. Thornton,
I'm Detective Grimes. I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Detective. I need to see James.
I'm afraid that's not possible right now. We're still processing the scene. Can you tell me when you last saw your husband?
During the fundraiser. He said he needed some air. I was moving between the hospitality suites. We had several set up for major donors. I didn't realize anything was wrong until the commotion started.
Which suite were you in when you heard?
The Diamond Donors Room, I believe.
She blinked rapidly. I still can't believe he's gone.
Is there someone who can stay with you tonight? Our family lawyer is on his way.
Grimes watched Amelia walk to a waiting town car escorted by a uniform. There was grief in the woman's bearing, certainly, but also something harder to name. Control, maybe, or preparation. The next morning, Grimes stood before the whiteboard in the squad room, marker in hand. Callahan was already at his desk with two coffees, sliding one toward her as she began. Senator James Thornton, 56, single stab wound to the chest between 9 and 10 p.m., found at 11:45 by two fundraiser attendees in the service alley behind the Grand Hotel. She wrote as she spoke, the marker squeaking against the board. No direct witnesses to the murder. Hotel staff saw the senator heading toward the service exit around 9:20. A bartender overheard him in a heated phone call shortly before that. Callahan added, the couple who found the body, Jessica Brennan and Mark Sullivan, didn't see anyone else in the alley. Sullivan thinks he heard a door closing at the far end, but he's not certain.
Priority interviews, Grimes said, writing three names, Amelia Thornton, David Chen, Mark Frost.
She paused, then added a fourth, unknown woman at bar.
What about the phone call? Callahan asked. The bartender said it sounded like an argument.
Get me the senator's phone records. I want to know who he was talking to and for how long.
Grimes stepped back from the board, studying what they had.
We also need background on Thornton. Political career, financial records, enemies, pending legislation. There's a gun control bill that keeps coming up. Could be relevant.
And the murder weapon?
ME says it's a kitchen knife, professional grade, the kind you'd find in a hotel kitchen. I want the hotel's kitchen inventory checked. If one of their knives is missing, we'll know it came from inside the building. If not, someone brought it.
Detective Rodriguez, a veteran investigator who had been listening from his desk, spoke up.
Thornton's been in state politics over two decades, rock-solid pro-gun voting record. There have been some recent whispers about him softening his stance, but I wouldn't put much stock in it.
Why not?
His office put out a press release just this morning reaffirming his pro-gun position, likely prepared before his death.
Interesting timing, Grimes murmured. All right. Callahan, start coordinating interviews with fundraiser attendees. Focus on anyone who interacted with Thornton in the hour before his estimated time of death.
I'll take Mrs. Thornton and Chen today. We'll get to Frost and the mystery woman as soon as we can find them.
One more thing, Callahan said. Crime scene techs noted a faint smell of men's cologne near the service door at the far end of the alley. Expensive stuff, apparently. Could belong to our killer.
Grimes wrote it on the board and circled it. Men's cologne. So we're looking at a male suspect or someone who wanted us to think so.
Good, let's get moving.
That afternoon, Grimes sat across from Amelia Thornton in the precinct's interview room. Amelia had changed into a black dress, her composure fully restored. Her pearl necklace caught the fluorescent light. A family lawyer sat beside her, gray-haired, silent, taking notes.
Mrs. Thornton, can you walk us through your evening at the fundraiser?
Of course. James and I arrived around 7. He was immediately pulled into conversations with donors. I spent most of the evening moving between the hospitality suites. We had 5 reserved for top-tier supporters.
That's a lot of rooms to cover.
It's common practice at these events. Each suite caters to different donor levels. It allows for more intimate conversations.
She paused.
I must have visited 4 or 5 throughout the night. Time becomes a blur at these things.
Did you notice anything unusual?
Now that you mention it, there was tension. In the Platinum Donors Room, I overheard whispers about James's stance on the upcoming gun control bill, and I saw Governor Harrington's aide, Mark Frost, entering one of the suites. That was unusual. He's from the other party.
Did you interact with Frost?
Briefly. He seemed out of place, nervous. Later, I saw him approach James in the main ballroom. They had what looked like an intense conversation.
When did you last see your husband?
Amelia's brow furrowed. Around 9:30. He mentioned needing air. I was heading to another suite. I remember thinking he'd be back for the keynote speech at 10:30.
Her composure slipped for a moment.
If I had known...
Mrs. Thornton, I need to ask, how would you describe your marriage?
Amelia met her eyes without flinching. We were partners, detective, in every sense of the word. 25 years is a long time. The relationship evolves.
Were you aware of any extramarital relationships your husband may have been involved in?
The lawyer shifted, but Amelia waved him off.
I assumed there were some over the years. I chose not to investigate. Our marriage was built on mutual respect and shared goals, not jealousy.
That's a very pragmatic view.
I'm a very pragmatic woman.
After Amelia left, Callahan appeared in the doorway. He'd been watching the interview feed. She didn't even blink at the affair question.
No, she didn't, Grimes agreed. Multiple rooms, alcohol flowing, everyone losing track of time. It's the perfect setup for an unverifiable alibi.
And notice how she pointed us toward the governor's aide and the gun control whispers.
You think she's directing us?
Everyone directs us, Mike. Our job is to figure out where they don't want us to look. But honestly, the affair angle...
She paused.
A wife who genuinely doesn't care about affairs doesn't kill over them. I'm not getting a jealousy motive from this woman.
So we cross her off?
Not yet, but she drops in priority. Let's focus on the men in this story. The cologne at the scene points male, the aide is missing, the governor's hiding something. That's where the heat is.
2 days later, Callahan came into Grimes's office and closed the door.
Two things. First, the hotel kitchen inventory came back. All knives accounted for. The murder weapon didn't come from the hotel.
So someone brought it. That's premeditation.
Right. But here's the thing. The manufacturer's mark on the knife matches a brand called Grand Cru, high-end culinary line, sold in gourmet kitchen stores across the state. We're talking thousands of these knives in circulation. It's going to be nearly impossible to trace to a specific buyer.
A common kitchen knife, brought from outside. Not a crime of passion grab from the nearest drawer. This was planned, but the weapon itself is a dead end for now.
She filed it away.
What's the second thing?
Mrs. Thornton's background. Her family is bigger than we thought. Amelia's maiden name is Cartwright, as in Cartwright Arms. Military contracts, advanced weapons systems, surveillance technology.
Cartwright Arms, Grimes repeated slowly.
That's the company that supplies our department's drug enforcement equipment.
The silence that followed was heavy.
This needs to go up the chain, Grimes said.
Document the conflict of interest. We proceed with the investigation, but everything goes by the book. No shortcuts, no judgment calls that could look compromised.
Callahan nodded.
There's more. A reward's been offered for information leading to the killer's arrest. $1 million.
The governor's office?
The Thornton family company.
Grimes rubbed her temples. $1 million reward is going to bring every conspiracy theorist in the state out of the woodwork.
Set up a team to handle tips. We need a system to separate noise from signal.
By the end of the first week, Grimes and Callahan had interviewed 32 fundraiser attendees. The picture that emerged of Senator Thornton's final hours was increasingly complicated. The senator had been working the room until roughly 8:45 p.m., his usual charismatic self. Then, around 8:50, he'd had a brief, intense exchange with Mark Frost near the bar. Multiple witnesses confirmed it. After that, his mood had shifted, distracted, agitated. He'd made a phone call from the hallway around 9:10 that the bartender described as heated. Then he'd told David Chen he needed air and headed for the service corridor. And somewhere between 9:20 and 10 o'clock, someone had put a knife in his chest. But the detail that kept nagging at Grimes was the cologne. CSI had identified it as Clive Christian No. 1, a fragrance that retailed for over $800 a bottle. That narrowed the field considerably.
She'd had Callahan cross-reference the guest list with known purchasers, but it was a slow process. "We need to find Frost," she told Callahan at their end-of-week briefing. "He's the last known person to have a confrontation with Thornton. He's connected to the governor, and now he's disappeared. Either he's our guy or he knows who is." The governor's office is stonewalling, saying Frost is on personal leave. "Then we go around them, pull Frost's financials, phone records, credit card activity. If he's alive and spending money, we'll find him."